I think this is the first interaction I've ever been asked a question like this before, and it's making me feel very old right now. This is
Oh,
hilarious.
no, I figured it would. It's kind of a rude question. Today we had on Doug Edrington, Team Ridge leader out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. He talks about how to recruit agents, the breakdown of his mentorship program, the scripts and role-playing process he does with his team, the biggest mistake agents make, and why new agents are soft.
The Broke Agent presents OverAsk Podcast.
Doug, you're a real estate mogul guru. We're very excited to have you on the show today. Thank you for being on.
What a compliment. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So for the people who may not know you, can you kind of give us your background real quick? Who are you, Doug? I know that cartoon. Remember that cartoon, Doug? Guy with the glasses. Is that maybe just Canadian? Just who?
Doug Funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so Doug Funny, you know, it's I hadn't heard that one in a long time. But yes, I am not Doug Funny. I'm Doug Edrington in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and been in the business, actually licensed for 18 years as of yesterday. Had my marketing guy told me it was my anniversary due to Facebook reminding. So thanks,
congratulations.
Facebook. Yeah, and so I'm officially of legal age to be a real estate agent, I guess, at 18. And
18's a long time in the business.
It does feel like a long time. I feel like a old soul in the business, but yeah, I've got a team, great team. That there's probably, I guess, 23 of us salespeople wise right now. About 5 years ago, I bought a Berkshire Hathaway franchise. So I think we're titled as a Team Ridge, because we're pretty much, I have no solo agents, have three teams in the brokerage. Obviously a big emphasis on my own team in that sense. And, we've, hit a lot of cool bars, I guess you could say. We just found out not too long ago, we were number six in the Berkshire franchise of mega teams for last year. So we got five more spots to go. We're trying to grow and try to get better.
How many units did you guys do last year?
It was, around 460 units. 150 million, 151, something like that in volume. Our average price points is about 350,000. Not our best year. Last year was a little bit of a learning curve for us. Hired a recruiter, brought on a lot of people kind of quickly. And then we had some lessons from that. And so we had to let go of a few people, and it's been a rebuilding year in a sense, but all things considered, you know, it was a good year.
Why don't you think it was your best year? Like what attributed to that?
Well, you know, when it comes to growing, it's like, you know, first off, the answer to most of a team leader's problems is recruit more people, hire more people. You know, you got culture issues, hire more people. You got production issues, hire more people. It seems like most answers wrapped around hire more people. And so a coach pushed me to hire a recruiter last year. And so last year, beginning of last year, hired someone from outside of the industry, learned a lot. First hire in a new position generally doesn't go as well as any of us want it to. And so I gave a little too much autonomy to that person. So I take full responsibility for it. And he hired a lot of really nice people, like good people, likable people, but definitely they all didn't align They all didn't align with like similar goals always, right? You know, some people that want to be a real estate agent but don't want to do the work, or maybe just culturally off, you know. But so we hired a bunch of people. We let go of a bunch of people. Actually, learning from that experience, shifted one of my good salespeople into the recruiter role that has done a fabulous job. So this year I think he's hired 16 people so far. And because he was in the business as a real estate agent, he can really facilitate to the recruits what they're going to go through. So it was a great shift in the seat on the bus, I guess you could say. And so we're back to rebuilding in a sense.
Got it. So when you're looking to hire these people, what do you like? Are these, oh, go ahead, Matt.
No, go for it.
When you're looking to hire these people or these agents, what are you looking for in these agents? Are these newly licensed agents, or are they people and agents from other teams?
You know, it doesn't matter. For the longest time, I used to say I love new agents, and I still do. But at the same time, it's like that's only because I didn't have a lot of experience bringing in agents already in the business. And we've started doing that in the past year. And it's like, you know what? It really doesn't matter. You know, you get a new agent, you get to train them the way that is best for them. And then you get an agent that's been in the business, you got to undo habits. They're both challenging. Both hard. It's both hard in a lot of ways. But what was your question?
Just if you're hiring newer agents getting agents from other teams.
Yeah. So in a sense, our hiring values, you probably heard some of this before, we've added onto it: hungry, humble, smart, with professional maturity and a little bit of swag. And okay. So if you think of those, you want a hungry person. You want someone who people tend to only earn, not all people, but if I'm stereotyping, people tend to earn what they need to earn, right? They don't always go above and beyond. So we want to make sure they're hungry. And because if they only need to earn 2 sales a year, that's probably not going to work out well for our team. Last year, I think our average agent sold 29 houses. And so we've got high production from a unit standpoint for a team, I believe, especially in our area. And so hungry is important. Humble, we don't want egos too big to where they're not willing to be a part of a team in a sense. Smart is you know, street smarts and book smarts. I hear a lot of salespeople say, you know, I'm really looking, you know, I've got great street smarts. I've got great street smarts. But like, if you can't wrap your head around the idea of when you run into a problem that you should just start with reading the contract, like that's scary, you know? So read, you know, so we just want to make sure they have some of that intelligence there. And then professional maturity, that's been an interesting one. That's been an interesting one for us to hone in on. How do we label that? Because there was a time where it's just like, okay, are we looking for a specific age or are we looking for an experience level? And we've just summed it up to professional maturity. Can they carry themselves in a way that would make everybody else in the team proud? And then a little bit of swag. You know, we're in a first impression business. If you can't pull that off, you're in trouble. In addition to that, I like to call it the vacation test. One of the areas that, our recruiter and I think about all the time is when we meet someone that we're thinking about having them on the team, would they pass the vacation test? Like if we were to, you know, like Eric, Matt, and I, let's say we all decided to go on a trip together, maybe to a real estate conference, you know, are you going to want to throw me out of the car or are you going to want to jump out of the car yourself? Because if you don't pass that vacation test, and it's just an opinion, you know, because people mesh with certain people. If we don't think that's going to fly, then we're probably not going to be great team members together because we shadow each other's appointments. We help each other out. You actually are going to be in the car with these people sometimes. So I think the vacation test is kind of like an easy fallback to think, would I go on vacation with this person? If the answer is no, they could be a great salesperson, but that doesn't always equate to like some longevity in the relationship with the team, right?
All right, if you're listening to this, this means you care about real estate marketing. You care about becoming a better agent. And that's exactly why you need to join our new platform, BAMX. We have monthly courses for our members, including my Instagram course, it's the best in the game, objection handlings, green screens, captions, and more. You also get access to our exclusive private community for literally a frappuccino a month. If you're listening to this and you're an agent, this is an absolute no-brainer. Use code OVERASK for 10% off. There's a link down in the description. Become a member of BAMX.
And I don't think I would go on vacation with anyone I've ever met in real estate.
Oh my God. What about me?
Well, maybe. Maybe you on a good day. But it sounds like, Doug, you were hiring. Go for it.
I actually remember when... just watching you guys on social media where I think Eric, you went up to Canada to see Matt for the first time. It literally felt like a reality TV show. Like we're two.
Yeah. Matt and I were communicating on DMs and phone and doing this podcast virtually for over a year. And then once the pandemic dissipated a little bit, finally flew up to Canada, got to meet him. We were filming stuff for like a funny real estate course. And yeah, I think Matt passed the vacation test. Doug, I've hung out with you. a bunch at like the Boomtown Conference and other conferences. You certainly passed the vacation test. You are a chill, easy to communicate with guy. But I love looking at that as a parameter for someone to hang out with. Like, can I sit in the car with this person? Can I sit on the beach with this person? If I want to keep communicating with this person, I think that makes complete sense.
I just remember that watching that, and I was just like, it's like two pen pals meeting for the first time.
Exactly. That's what it felt like. And it was love at first sight, right, Matt?
That's correct.
So you got in the business in 2004. We are very curious as to what it looked like back then. Was there GPS? Did you have to print out the map? I mean, I know obviously there were cell phones, but these were like Nokia razors. So when you're trying to find the property, are you mapping everything out before? Was there DocuSign? Like, what was the lay of the land like back in 2004? I know I'm acting like it's ancient, but I was 14 years old, so I wasn't, you know, exactly aware of everything going on from the real estate world.
I think this is the first interaction I've ever been asked a question like this before, and it's making me feel very old right now. This is hilarious.
No, I figured it would. It's kind of a rude question. But...
No, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. So what was it like back then? So no joke, it's funny you say that. I remember going to Circuit City. My parents and I worked together. They got in the business about a year before I did. And I remember going to Circuit City. I don't know what year it was, but it was around then or shortly after. And it was like a big deal. It was like Father's Day. I got to get Dad something good. And I got him a Garmin GPS because that was like hot stuff back then. But before that, no, MapQuest was my friend. I thought it was so cool that I could put all the addresses in and I could grab the little bar and drag it and put them in order the way I wanted. And we had to print them off. I was a typical realtor where the back floorboard of the car was completely full of MLS sheets that people didn't want. And it's kind of a funny thing.
That still exists today, I think, having the MLS sheets in the car.
I guess. I mean, I remember running around with the buyers and I'm like, hey, so if we don't want to look at the house, we throw it in the back. It's done. It's trash, right? Never look back again.
It must be kind of nerve-wracking driving around.
Did you have an MLS book?
I didn't. I'm not that old. No, I didn't have an MLS book. I remember as a kid when my parents were looking at houses, and I remember people joke about it, like, you know, they rip the first page off of who it is and then they hand a book. Like, they did that to my parents. I remember a realtor that did that. And I did have the, instead of the app on our phone to open the lock boxes, I had the old school boxy key. Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I've seen that. A lot of people tag me in those still. And then I repost those, the ancient realtor kind of lock boxes. Did they have computers back then, Doug? Did they have cell phones and everything?
Yeah, I'm not that old. Yes.
Got it. What about DocuSign? Like, if you had to get something to a client, was it fax to get them to sign it? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, it was fax was the thing when I started, as wild as that sounds. I mean, I think email was like, email and offers was kind of fresh. It feels like, God, you're making me feel old. I do remember though, I am that classic case story of my first brokerage that I was at. It was a big office. There was a lot of agents there. And you had a listing and an offer was coming in and you didn't want anybody to see the counter or whatever. Like, you were hovering over the fax machine, making sure that no one else saw your piece of paper.
That's scary.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. A while back ago, I had another agent that sent me a counter. And I was like, I don't have it. I don't get it. And it was someone up in age a little bit. And I was asking her, how did you send it to me? And she's like, with my phone. And right. I'm like email, text, fax, like, what are you doing? And this is way past fax days. And her office wasn't too far from mine. I was like, how about I come over there? And I go over there and I look at her phone and she literally still has a flip phone. Like, you know,
right. She's got the Nokia razor.
It was a razor. I was like, how did she send this from her phone? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I've always even had anxiety just thinking about the fact of driving to a client with, you know, maybe even before fax time, but just driving to a client, then like watching them physically sign everything and go over the contract while they're asking me questions. This is maybe like my new agent nerves speaking and not knowing the answer to everything instead of just DocuSigning and being like, let me know if you have any questions. Then they ask the question. Then I can ask my mentor. Then the mentor could give me the answer that I could give back to the other agent. But that's why I'm doing content right now. And I wanted to talk to you about mentorship because I've heard you talk about mentorship. I think it was on Byron's podcast a while ago, back at the Boomtown conference. Yeah. So how important is mentorship to the new agents you hire? And what does that mentorship program look like?
It's key. I mean, you know, it's all about education in our business. I really believe that any agent that joins our team, for their first 10 transactions, they have a mentor. And there's a lot of mentorships in real estate. Ours is has a cadence to it. It's very specific. We follow a syllabus, and you know, the mentors have to be qualified to be that, you know, and we've got a process to make sure, and I train, and I have weekly updates with our mentors to make sure they're handling their mentees to the highest standard. And but they follow some certifications right out the gate. Four specifics. It's first is contracts, second is phone scripts, third is buyer presentation, fourth is tech, because you know, we got a lot of tech in our business these days. Once they go through those first four certifications, and they're like a final exam, they're tested on it, they at that point earn lead flow from the team. And so we don't provide a new agent leads right out the gate. They've got to earn that first. And so after that, their mentor shifts more from a trainer to a coach, and throughout that process for their first 10 transactions. And it works really, really well. They follow 2 times a week. The mentor meets with them via webinar style. The calls are recorded for the mentee to be able to go back and watch, for me to be able to spot audit our mentors to make sure they're doing their job the best. And it creates a lot of success, but it's not just for new agents. Like, even experienced agents coming over to our team, we actually just hired about a month ago a small team that joined our team. That was the first time we've had that happen. It was a lot of fun. And this is 7-year agents that came over, and they're going through the mentorship process, and actually just now getting back into all this video. So it's comical that we're doing this for me. We just had a video session set up, and I got to interview the team leader that we just hired 30 days ago. And they were enlightening me in the video. I didn't realize it, like how valuable the foundational pieces of our mentorship has been to a 7-year agent that ran their own team. And so they're like, man, I hate that I didn't do this 7 years ago. So it's extremely valuable.
Why do you want a team ridge? Why don't you want solo agents? Is there a reasoning behind that?
A team ridge. I was trying to figure out what you said there. So a team ridge versus solo agents. You know, there's a level of, it comes down to what's our time worth, right? And in our industry, there's 100% brokerages all around every corner, right? And as a team leader or a broker owner, however you want to call it, I want to get paid well too. I mean, there's a reality of that, right? But I want to be able to provide massive value to be paid well. And so it's got to be mutual, that we're both benefiting equally. And I've just found, for me at this point in my life, is that to make a small cap or a very small percentage off of others, but then provide massive value because they need help and they need assistance. And it just doesn't seem like the best business move for me at this time. I do have a JV with a title company, so that helps offset some costs because I have 2 other teams. And the great thing about our other teams in our brokerage here in Chattanooga, they're great teams as well, but they have great leaders. And so their leaders take on the heavy lifting and to receive a larger split, I guess you could say. I'd rather put my efforts into developing some leaders that can handle that on the team side of the brokerage. And then I get to continue to focus on my own team. Unless you go really big, really, really big around having lots and lots and lots of agents, it just fiscally hasn't made sense to me yet. I know plenty of very successful brokerage owners that have made it work for them, but it seems like it's always about all the ancillary businesses. And I just haven't developed to that point yet. I've got title, but I don't have insurance. I don't have mortgage. I don't have, and all those home services that come along with that. So I'm probably just not to that chapter yet to be able to see that clear enough.
Before the recruiter, what was your recruiting process like? Are you reaching out to people through video? Are you doing like agent to agent content to try to attract these people? Like, how are you getting people onto your team?
Well, I'd spend a lot of time at bars.
Actually,
I'm not joking, and recruit a lot of bartenders. Okay. A really good restaurant locally in Chattanooga that's kind of like a, I don't know, arguably one of the best restaurants in Chattanooga. And I think we've hired like 8 people from that restaurant. And, but it was, you know, you become a regular somewhere. Like real estate agents do it too. They become a regular at a local establishment and then they build relationships and get referrals. Mine just happened to be more about recruiting. This is not a business plan that I would recommend necessarily. I was the casual recruiter, I guess you could say. And, you know, when I started focusing on with my coach of like, all right, how are we going to meet the goals that I want to align with it? As I said earlier, it came down to, we need more agents. And so it forced me into, opening up my mind to say, maybe Doug can't do it all. And I need a leverage point there. And so, that's where the recruiter role has really started to pay off since last year. But prior to, I mean, it was, you know, just like most teams, a careers tab and who do you know? Careers tab on your website. And so we've taken it to the next level where we're really focusing on calling all the people that passed the real estate test. We've gone down the entire MLS. We're calling every single person in our local market. We're really diving into a lot of the social media ads right now, to where it's, you know, a lot of testimonials with our current agents. Our team's been great about helping us grow. So, yeah.
Is that what you're running ads on, the testimonials? Those videos or photos look like? Like, are they Facebook, Instagram ads, Google ads?
All we're really focused on right now, we're just getting it. I hired a new video marketing director, videographer, I guess you could say, about 6 months ago. And he's now to the point where he's dangerous, right? And then this week we have a full-time virtual editor starting for us. So when I say we're getting started, we're really just getting started back on this. It seems, I'm sure many other agents and teams have gone through where you've got a good run with a certain role on your team or someone you're leveraging if you're a solo agent. And I've had a great run with a marketing position for a while. And we put a lot of content out in Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And she grew up and grew past us and wanted to start her own marketing company. And she's done that. She's been very successful at it. But where did that leave me? Starting over. And so had to hire a couple others and go through. And now we're back at it again. And we're just now getting to this point. So it's normal on some level. It's not what we like and what we want. But the goal right now is to focus on the 2 social media platforms that at least we're very familiar with, which is Instagram and Facebook. And, you know, we're not on TikTok. We're not on Snapchat. I'm not trying to like dominate at this point. I want to be good at one before we add another on.
Makes sense.
What's your turnover like, on the team? Because a lot of times teams are like stepping stones for some agents. And since you have a brokerage of only teams, what's that? Is it good? Like, do people seem to stay once they come? And what does that look like?
Okay. So something I hear agents complain about all the time is that online leads are complete trash. They're not converting. They're not responsive. So let me let you in, Matt, on a little secret. Boomtown was literally designed to overcome those challenges. They know that online home shoppers are further out from transacting, maybe 3, 6, 12 months down the road. So Boomtown actually nurtures those leads for you using proven automated smart drip campaigns.
And beyond that, Boomtown also monitors your entire database of leads for behaviors that indicates readiness to transact and then engage them for you at exactly the right time. You see everything, everywhere, all at once. Yeah, it's kind of like that, except it's you that's everywhere. And there are no hot dog fingers, Eric. Okay, you know a little bit about hot dog fingers. Yeah. So if you're ready to grow your database and have your transactions steadily increase, visit boomtown, ROI.com/overask. Plus, Get $750 in free digital advertising credits. That's boomtownroi.com/overask.
Well, so I'm going to give you two answers to that. Keep in mind that I told you last year we hired a bunch of people we shouldn't have hired, and we had to let go of a lot of people. And I mean, it was, when I say a lot, it was probably 12, 15 people, which is a lot for us. And so, last year we lost like 50% of our people. But I will say, out of everybody that we have, that I would like to still be a part of our team, I'd say we keep probably 90% of them. And so I'm really proud of that. We haven't had to deal with a lot of turnover lately. Because we've got the right people on the bus at this point. But historically though, there's probably been 200 agents that have worked on the Edrington team over the past 18 years. And some of them I'm really proud of, because when I look at the rankings on the MLS of where everybody lands, like top 50 agents in my marketplace, there's like a solid 20 of them that used to be on our team. I'm proud of a lot of them. Some of them I'm kind of pissed off at, because I feel like they should be higher up in rankings. you were trained better than that. Get up there with us. It's just a journey. It's a chapter. Early in my career, especially being younger in age, since you're making me sound like a really old guy, right?
It was a ridiculous way to start a podcast, I will say that. Saying,
funny, let me tell you.
Back in 2000, did they have computers back then when you first got your real estate license? That's crazy, man.
Yeah, it was wild. But no, I mean, like earlier in my career, I used to get mad when someone left me. And I think that's normal for a new young leader in ways. It's like, I brought you into this world, I should be able to be the one to take you out. But in all reality, it's we're just a chapter in their book, right? And people come and go. And what I've learned is that if someone wants to leave us, it's for the better. You know, I mean, why force a square peg in a round hole? Like let's end on good terms and part ways. Also, a lot of problems created when people leave that create that anger is there's not a clear exit plan. And so one of the things I'm a big believer in, this kind of like, you asked tactical stuff, Eric, and this is kind of on the boring side, but one of the lessons I learned a long time ago is get with your broker. If you run a team, get with your broker and make sure that the paperwork aligns, because every agent generally has an ICA agreement with their broker. And then they also, a lot of times, have a team member agreement with their team leader. And I'd say 100% of the time, those documents don't align. And so now I opened up this brokerage 5.5 years ago. And one of the things that I wanted to do right out the gate, learning from past experiences, was we're going to have one agreement that's an ICA agreement for the brokerage. And then we're going to have a team member and team leader addendum that coincides with the ICA agreement. So therefore, if there ever is a legal dispute, we don't have conflicting documents. And I think that's a huge issue in the country, in the real estate space. I have heard, I'm not in California, but I have heard that, like, I guess it's called CAR, the California Association of Realtors. I have heard that they have actual like statewide team documents. So that's kind of interesting in states that have that, if that's true. But most states I don't think have that. So instead of trying to play attorney and build your own team member agreements, I would get with your broker and say, I want to piggyback off of yours and let's create an addendum. So it's one document that we all three parties can agree on, broker, team member, and team leader.
Well, I am in California and I have no idea about that addendum, but I can tell you that I was also on a team. I was hired as a buyer's agent, and the contract was I would get 40% of any buyer that I closed and 30% of any listing, because the team was carrying the brunt or carrying all of like the marketing, and I was marketing them. So my entire goal was to get expired listing packages into the hands of sellers and set up appointments. But basically what it turned out to be is I was basically an unpaid assistant sitting there, open houses, doing inspections, doing showings, everything like that. So there was no loyalty to the team. There was very little mentorship because I'm not learning these contracts. I'm just, you know, kind of running around like a chicken with his head cut off, just trying to like do appointments and kind of getting experience just by listening to people. But I love what you said early on just about the 10 deals that the agents have to go through, like during that mentorship program. Were people actually in the room with these agents during their listing presentations, or were they solo for that? Like, did you have a mentor with them like every step of the way, or how did that work?
Yeah. So throughout the mentorship with us, we do a lot of role playing, a whole lot of role playing, part of their homework assignments. And yes, we give homework in the very beginning of the certifications is record yourself performing a presentation on preferably another team member, right? Not a client. Sometimes it's a family member, sometimes it's whatever, but they need a body on the other side to perform that presentation to. And then I think this is key into actually becoming better at the trade is after you've done your homework assignment by recording the role play or the presentation or whatever it may be, we require our agents to do and again, this is just in the beginning, but we require them to critique themselves. They have to go back and watch it and critique themselves. I was not good in school. I was the guy that last minute wrote the paper, didn't care if I passed or failed. I just most of the time wanted to get it turned in. So at least I just didn't look like I didn't try, right? I didn't learn anything. If the teacher made me go back and grade myself, I probably would have learned something, you know? And so that was a takeaway, just kind of reflecting on childhood of like how we should do it here. And it's been very valuable because otherwise, before we did that, yeah, people did what I did when I was in school. They made the recording and just said, God, that was awful. Don't even want to watch it and turn it in.
No one hears it ever again. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope no one hears it ever again. So I have a question for you though, Eric. You mentioned when you were on a team, 40% to buyers, 30% to sellers. I think we all agree that a seller is probably more challenging to get than a buyer.
Definitely. Especially in your early years.
Maybe it's different in higher price points out in California. I don't know. I've never understood why a salesperson is punished financially for getting the harder deal.
Well, their argument was that they're spending tens of thousands of dollars on marketing these listings. So the expired listing packages I was dropping off were for properties anywhere from 3 million to 15 to 20 million. This is like Beverly Hills, Bel Air. So they're going to spend, you know, 30, 60 days, not 30, 60 days, but they're going to spend $20,000-$30,000 on this thing with brochures, the special website for that actual property, the drone video, like everything like that. So that was their argument. But yeah, look, it certainly did not encourage me to do business. All it did was piss me off. Go ahead, Matt.
Was that your pitch when you went to the door? Did you just give us your pitch?
Yeah, exactly. Like, look, they're gonna spend a property website. They're gonna do a drone and everything. You'll get a brochure. That's fantastic. No, my pitch was knock on the door and just say, hey, Alfonso and Bjorn, who are not me, would love to have a meeting with you. One of the worst pitches of all time. But again, I was never taught how to have these conversations. I think recording yourself would be extremely valuable and probably sometimes more scary than the actual listing presentation itself. Like if you're actually in the room with the seller, you're just so focused on how to communicate with them. When you're actually listening back to yourself, that's extremely valuable. Matt and I listen back to our podcast. I always watch like clips to see, am I saying this word too much? I say the word insane all the time. I say from a content perspective, like every episode. And you have to critique that, right? Like you just, it shows you what you actually sound like. So I love that aspect that you made them do that. Scary as hell though.
It is. But you know what, if they can't push through I hope the training is harder than real life, right?
Yeah.
And so if people can have the courage and the tenacity to push through the hard there, we know they're going to excel well with our clients. And, you know, that keeps us out of trouble, provides good service, referrals, so on.
When I started, I had to do this exact thing with my team. I had to record myself and do the listing thing, and I would do it with my team lead. But the problem was, he only ever gave me objections, and we never had scripts for anything that was like, oh yeah, that sounds good. So then I was like in an appointment one day and the person was like, yeah, that sounds good. And I didn't know what to say. So do you have some for both?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think this brings up a really good question. If an agent is thinking about interviewing, or new to, soon to be agent or current agent is thinking about interviewing a new broker or a new team leader, I think the one of the most important questions that never get asked, but I would, if I were in this situation, I would ask that leader, who trained you? Who trained you? Because if they don't have a coach, if they don't have a mentor, if they don't have someone to answer to on some level, that means they're, what new are they bringing to the table, right? Because too often, great salespeople believe them to be a great leader. And although some people have natural tendencies to leadership, I learned very quickly that I thought I was a good leader years ago, like 2016, I think it was. I was like, all right, I think I'm a good leader. I got recruited into the Tom Ferry world to coach for them. And I remember showing up to like boot camp. They literally called it boot camp for coaches. And day one, and like literally in the first day, egg on my face, I felt this small. I was like, wow, okay, maybe I'm an okay salesperson, but I am definitely not a great leader. And then throughout the process of boot camp and then ongoing training and then coaching for about 6 years or so, I realized that like, wow, I have so much more to learn. And so leadership is a learned skill. And if you're going to someone to say, lead me, one of the questions I'm going to ask in that interview process is, who leads you? And if that person is offended by that, you probably got an egotistical individual that doesn't have any, they don't have a good answer to that, right? And so look for who your leaders are.
Smart. I like that. I relate to that too, Matt, in terms of what happens if they actually say yes. Because at one time, the one time I actually dropped off an expired listing package and the lady invited me in, she invited me into her house and started taking me around this $2.5 million house in Beverly Hills. I had no idea what to say about it. I didn't really know the next steps except for, how do I get Alfonso and Bjorn in this room? Like, let's just get to the next appointment where they could do it, right? So she's walking me around this house, showing everything. And I'm just like, oh, this is nice. This is great. Oh, you got a mezuzah on your door. Oh, you're from Israel. I'm from, you know, just trying to find any sort of like commonality, keep the conversation as far away from real estate as possible, even though she's taking me around the house. But yeah, you have to learn the yeses in all of this. So totally agree.
An early agent, long time ago, because I'm so old, guy named Brian Seaforth, great dude. He lives up in Michigan now. He moved to Chattanooga. He was on our team for maybe 2 years or so. And then they had babies and moved back up with the family up in Michigan. But one of his, right out the gate, we used to start with scripts. And I was unfortunately probably more like the guy that you were talking about earlier of like, hey, we're going to run these objections and I want to hear your answer. But I wasn't training them on what the answer was. This was really early on. And so learn the hard way is the best lessons. But we were teaching these scripts. Well, he gets an appointment. He goes to shows the house. And I get a phone call one evening. I answered, it's Brian. And he starts cussing me up and down. He's from up north. And I'm in the south. I'm like, whoa, what's going on, man? Like, calm down. He's like, these people want to make a freaking offer on this house. And I don't know what the hell to do. And I'm like, huh.
Yep.
Wow, I didn't think you'd get to an offer that fast. You know, yeah. I thought we'd get around to that. So I think procedure, protocol, SOPs, whatever you want to call it. Like, yeah, another probably really great question if you're looking at joining a brokerage or a team, because that will happen. And you'll do like Eric was talking about, like you're going to like, oh, my God, what if they actually want to list the house? Like, I don't know what to do. So for sure.
Yeah.
A lot to learn from that.
100%. 100%. I keep like saying stuff just to see how lagged I am. So like, yeah, I'll say something just to try and like gauge how far off I am.
You sound like you're doing good. I am curious though, Matt, why does our age generation get so like statistical when it comes to answering questions like 100%? Do you ever say 90% or 110?
No, but Doug, not exactly your podcast, is it? I'm not the one asking the questions.
Or our generation.
I don't know. That's one thing I say a lot. I say like a lot, because I watch the podcast back as well. Good point. Good point. Oh. I don't know. I don't know, but I say it a lot. I say it in appointments a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's 100%. Sometimes 110%, sometimes 1,000%.
You know, yeah, those are the only three, 100, 110, and 1,000. If you say anything else, that you sound psychotic. Yeah. I might throw that in though, Doug. I like that. Just being like, yeah, absolutely, 80%, 80%. It's like, oh, okay, so you might not do this then.
Sound
okay.
Like a moron. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a completely unhinged.
90%.
Well, I don't know. The thing is, Doug, is all I know is you started real estate while Eric and I were playing PlayStation in high school. So it's a little hard to relate with the percentage stuff, but what is it like starting as an 18-year-old? You're really not that old. I don't know how old you are, but I'm pretty sure like a couple years older than us. What's it like starting as an 18-year-old?
So as I said, my parents got in the business about a year before I did. And I was typical 18-year-old, man. I mean, I say typical, like in high school, I had some really great influence that I was the grunt. I was the ditch digger. I got paid $7-$8 an hour to help kind of like a second dad in my life, I guess you could say. He had a bunch of rental property. He helped me out in teaching me how to swing a hammer, as I say. So when I turned 18, I wanted to buy a house to flip, and bought this house for like $40,000 and flipped it and sold it for around 80 something and walked away with like $15,000 and thought it was awesome. My mom wanted to list my house and I was like, oh my God, you're going to make $2,500 off of me. Like, I'm like, I'm getting my license. And that's kind of how that started. You know? And yeah, $2,500. Right. And, but it was, I was like, you know, I camped a bunch. We have a lot of climbing around here. So I like climbed a bunch. I was in school, but I really wasn't in school. So I was doing all the things that everybody else wanted me to do. My girlfriend wanted me to go to school. My parents wanted me to go to school. And so I was going through the motions. And then, but my parents come from a sales background in the automobile industry. And they taught me how to work really hard and really focus on like scripts matter before I think scripts was at least exposed to me at that time in my brokerage. And so from an early age, I was trained to work hard, and I was trained to have anything. I can have anything I want as long as I can afford it or afford the payment, which was kind of bad in the beginning. And so, you know, it was a cool opportunity though, at a young age to make a big paycheck. Right. And so just being exposed to it, having my parents tolerate me and my nonsense, like, if I didn't have them there, I'm sure I would have been fired from wherever I went to work at for being an 18-year-old, you know, right, dude. Right. I remember though, our first deal I had with my parents is any house I sold, I got $500. And that lasted for like a year. And then I was like, I think I'm better than this. So I started pushing. Right. And then, you know, it went on from there. It was probably, I think I was 23, 24 when I started taking the reins a little, the process of taking the reins started taking over, which is still a really young age. So I just had a lot of leadership experience, whether it was good or bad. I had a lot of experience at a young age, which I think has helped me get to where I'm at today. And then exposure to conferences and stuff like that. Speaking of being old, you'll find this funny. CRMs were out then and computers were out then, but for probably the first 6 years of my career, we used, your audience probably doesn't even know what I'm talking about, but 3x5 index cards in a card file box. And instead of having a CRM, every person had a card and you had their name, phone number, address, what type of lead they were, and you put a follow-up date on it. And the card box was organized by January through December, and you had two sets of 1 through 31, and you just rotated them. Do you guys know what I'm talking about, or does this just sound like
completely? Yeah,
index cards? Of course we know what index cards
are. Yeah, yeah, my great-grandparents had those.
Yeah, yeah.
But you actually physically wrote things down? You physically wrote things down? This must have been before Boomtown, by the way, Matt.
This was definitely before Boomtown. And I don't think Boomtown existed at that point, or I didn't know about it.
Was that Top Producer's first endeavor?
So, Top Producer was my first CRM. That was like
everyone's first CRM was Top Producer.
Yeah, But then it was Boomtown after that for forever now. But I think an interesting point is it worked. And I'm not promoting 3x5 index cards. It's that if you follow a process, it will work. It's even if it's old school, like just stick to something and don't just, you know, not.
Yes. Boomtown, fantastic CRM, obviously sponsors the podcast. But if you run a note card company and you want to sponsor the podcast as well, we of course will 100% promote that. Doug, I got another question about the younger agents. So since you went through being a younger agent, I went through it, Matt's going through it. What's like the number one problem you see with younger agents on your teams right now? Say they're 24, they just got their license. Like what's the most common problem? What are they doing wrong?
Too soft.
Yeah.
Too soft, right? I mean, I think the whole world's getting soft right now. And so you got to want to work hard. Byron Lazine came to my office a couple of years back and he spoke to our whole company. And again, we're in Tennessee, we're in the Bible Belt. To cuss or curse in front of a group at the time was like, oh, what's happening? I'm going to a Tom Ferry conference for the first time. Like my parents looked at me like, where have you brought us? Right.
Oh my God. Like, to a Tom Ferry conference.
Yeah. It was wild. The first time. And so
not to like a Nirvana Gary concert B. or Nirvana. Matt's wearing the Nirvana shirt. That's all I could think about.
Right. But Byron came into our office and he was like, guys, you got to work your ass off for the first year minimum. And I think that resonated with a lot of people because it's great to bring outsiders into your ecosystem and let them hear it from someone else. Because, you know, I can say the same thing to my team over and over and over again. And then someone else can come in and say the exact same thing. And they're like, this is the greatest thing ever. And, you know, my dad says that all the time. He's like, you know, I've been telling you this for 10 years. And then Tom Ferry says it and you do it. And I'm like, it's just the way the world works, right? But to come back to your question though, like you got to work hard and you got to think long term. If you're just thinking about your paycheck today, the results are maybe will take care of that, maybe. But if you can think long term and take care of the clients long term, and you really got to take care of yourself before you can take care of them. And you got to focus on the basics. You got to learn the scripts. You got to learn the presentation. You've got to measure what you're doing. And I do believe I see. It's always fun to see an anomaly that usually has a really good upbringing of working hard. But this whole work-life balance thing, I get it, but I don't get it. You know, work your tail mm-hmm. off right now so you can go vacation, so you can, you know, think about that weird word of retirement in whatever fashion that means to you. But the whole focus of starting out your planner I want to be done at 6 o'clock in the evening and I don't work weekends. Like you're wasting somebody else's time while you're learning.
Yeah. Your mindset's just so different when you're 23. Like when I got my license immediately, I was just so focused on my social life and how can I just get done with this stuff so I could go hang out with my friends and so I could go to a bar, so I could go pick up girls. Like that's all I cared about. And sports and just like it. And then now all I care about is of course my wife, family, and my career. Like there is like a moment. Sometimes it's way further along the line for certain people, but I assume that's just got to be difficult to fight through when you're dealing with younger agents, just because all of their friends are out, you know, like the realtor has to sit open houses on Sundays and Saturdays. Like that's like when the real estate world awakens is on the weekends. And if you're mm-hmm. telling an agent, like, you got to cut that out, like, you can't rage tonight on Friday because you got a showing at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning. Maybe this is just me that I'm talking about, but I think that does, you know, play a role in this.
I think if you're a younger agent that you're offended by what I'm saying right now, you know, like, get over it and decide if you're in the right career field or not. But I really think where the breaks come for most successful realtors, it's a vacation, because when you're in your hometown and you are off in a sense, you can't, I mean, I hope you're not going to ignore that high price point phone call or even the low price point, but like, you know, we're always teased when you see a really awesome lead come through and you're off. And then now you're in that weird dance of like, do I tell my wife no, or do I tell the customer no, right? That's a tough situation to be in. So having the conversations with your loved ones at home and making sure they really understand the career you're getting into, it's a lifestyle, as we all know. But I'm a big fan of vacation often, because when you're gone, you kind of can't go show a house, you know? So I think you got to earn yourself up to that place to where you're comfortable to take those vacations and take that time off. My wife and I travel often. It's the only way we can get away, because I'm, you know, Monday through Thursday, I'm usually in the office from 8 to 8, and Fridays are kind of hit or miss, and that's a little bit by design. I'm also not in production anymore, so I think that changes the dynamic a little bit. But even when I'm off at home, I'm still on. You guys know what I mean? Like, it's just you always got a new problem you're focusing on.
Yeah. They're too soft and they're too entitled. I think that's just what it comes down to. I haven't seen my wife in 4 months. I don't care. No, I'm joking. Sorry. She's upstairs right now. She'll kill me if she hears that. I think they're soft and I think they're entitled, and I think they need to hear people like you say that, because, and another thing you said about like your dad saying, you know, I've said this 1,000 times. I really believe it's like you hear something one day from that one person at the right time, and it just all makes sense. So like, even though you feel like maybe you're saying the same thing over and over and over again, sometimes that one person needs to hear it from you on that day.
You guys probably experienced this. There's an old saying from an old man. It's hard to be famous in your own town. And so like, you guys are famous in the real estate industry, right? Like, a lot of people want to get a picture with you when you show up to a conference, right? They want to interview on a podcast. In your own hometown, do you have that same vibe on people?
If you're asking me, absolutely not, of course.
Hard to be famous in your own town.
It's not a Tom Ferry conference walking around Los Angeles. I would probably be a Z-list, because
we,
you got
we
everybody
seek
else
anything
here.
Real estate. We seek it out for the for the notoriety. Yeah, no.
Yeah,
no,
sometimes
you're right. Nothing. I can go anywhere I want.
Sometimes I'll just wander into a Compass office or a Berkshire Hathaway office just to see if I still got it. But yeah, just walking around the street, absolutely not. But hey, in the kingdom of the blind, Matt, this is a perfect time for this. The one-eyed man rules. So if real estate is the kingdom of the blind, we are the one-eyed man,
right,
if you get that reference, Doug.
Yeah.
Got to throw that cliche in there once an episode. So what was your point with that? Are you just saying that you suck?
My point is it's great to bring in the speakers from out of town. It's great to hear people from other parts of town, because like, for whatever reason, you know, if you guys come to Chattanooga and you speak to our company about everything you've learned over the years and what you do, what to do, what not to do, I could have the exact same advice that you guys have, but you guys are going to be more impactful to it, right? To that group of people. And so, the point is it's kind of twofold, right? For the leaders out there, bring in speakers, have people into your office, because your team and your peers that you've committed to bringing value to, it can't always just be you as the mouthpiece, right? But then on the flip side, get outside of your hometown and get into a learning environment, like these conferences and all these things that we see each other at, because you're able to get away from the day-to-day hustle and bustle, and you're surrounded by a lot of energy and a lot of excitement and people willing to learn. So I guess that's my point.
Point taken. Makes complete sense. Totally understand that. I've heard you talk about scripts, objection handling, hard work, not being soft. Haven't heard you mention anything about social media. Do you think agents these days are too caught up on social media and growing on Instagram and listening to this podcast and seeing what we're doing and trying to do that as opposed to the back to basics thing? Are you in that camp, or do you think both of them can work concurrently?
I think the basics come first. The basics come first. There's too many agents out there that want to become social famous, Insta famous, whatever you want to call it. And they expect people to reach out to them. And some people are really good about creating that environment and creating a lot of communication, but then they don't know how to close. You know, they don't know how to guide the person down the right path. They struggle in those areas. So I think foundationally first is important. I mean, we've all heard of, you know, we all know that when an agent first gets in the business, especially as a solo agent, they're focused on a logo and their business card and their website. And next thing you know, they've spent a lot of time trying to put all that together and find the third party resources to make it. And then they run out of money. And so I think step number one is learn the basics, get underneath the mentorship of someone, especially that can provide you leads. I'd rather practice on a stranger than like my family or my best friend, you know? But be trained up before you even touch a stranger is the best way to do it for sure. But you know, social is great in the right hands, right? You guys do a great job. You guys are great characters online and people follow you and they enjoy it and they communicate with you. We all know agents that like, they're like, I want to get into social. What's my password? And you're like, let's just save yourself a decade. Don't. By the time you figure it out, that'll be
get
my
back story. Get back to the note cards.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be note cards by the time they figure it out. Yeah. Well, everyone just stopped.
Well, what we're doing right now, folks, if you're listening, is there's a delay because there's a slight delay. So I'm waiting to see if Matt's going to jump in. There's no awkwardness.
Canada has bad Wi-Fi
being said on this. This is Canada has bad Wi-Fi. Doug is providing tremendous value. Doug, conferences. I see you at the TF conference. I see you at the Boomtown conference. Berkshire Hathaway, you're all over the place. You're a conference groupie, I would say. Why should agents go to these? Like, do you think this is a good investment for agents to spend hundreds of dollars to go to an Inman conference or a TF conference? And do you encourage your agents to do it?
I do. I am a conference junkie, I guess you could say. If it's a good conference, which all the ones you've listed are great, but if you go to a great conference, there's this thing called conference high, right? You know, for the next couple of weeks, you're Superman, Superwoman, and you feel unstoppable because you have this new knowledge and you saw someone else there that you compared yourself to on stage, and you're like, well, if they can do it, I can do it. But that fades away over time, right? Because life gets busy, personal life gets in the way of your business, and you stub your toe a few times, and all of a sudden you forget about all that stuff. I've got boxes full of notes from conferences that I every year at some point in time towards the end of the year when it's like business planning time, I'll go through the entire year's notes. I'm old school, so I like to put it on ink and paper. But I'll go through all the books, and I'll literally break it down into a couple sections of like mindset, probably just two: mindset or motivation and tactical. And I can usually debrief an entire year's notes down to like a one pager on tactical and a one pager on mindset and motivation. And that starts to become the foundation of our business plan. You know, what do we learn throughout the year? What do we accomplish? What were we really excited about that we just forgot about, but it was exciting when we put the note on paper? And I think that that's extremely valuable. Everybody I know that goes to conferences, it's kind of like the rent versus own analogy that we talk about in real estate. Like, you know, they always have this is this much net worth of renters and this much net worth of homeowners. We all know that's true as it applies to that. I think it's the same thing. People that go to conferences earn more money than people that don't. Statistically speaking, right?
Is that a fact?
I'm going to call it a fact. It's a Doug fact.
Okay. It feels like it's correct.
It does feel like it's correct. It's close enough. We'll call it that.
Yeah.
90%.
I mean, I think it makes sense. Like anyone that we've had so many people from the TF ecosystem on this podcast or Inman, like all these people that we've met through conferences, and they're all the highest operators because they're the ones willing to spend the money. They're going to spend thousands of dollars to go to these events, and they're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on coaching to have that accountability. So they're the ones that really, really care about their business. I love these conferences. Just, I feel like I get such an enormous amount of content from them. I love meeting everybody at these conferences and having these relationships so we could have people on podcasts and so we could get dinners later and throw parties and everything. Like, they're just, they're so fun, and it's such a great break from your actual real estate business that I highly recommend going to any of these. And we're throwing actually a band bash at the Tom Ferry conference in August. So you should come to that August 22nd, Tuesday, if you're listening.
Tuesday.
Details to come.
I'll be
Matt,
there.
You got to come to this one. This one's going to be epic. Doug, thank you so much for coming on. I hope to see you at the TF conference. We'll see you out in August. And where can the people find you? Where should they follow you? How do you find Doug?
Instagram, Facebook, Doug Edrington. Best way to connect for sure. Like I said, we've just hired video editor. We're about to try to be like you guys and put a lot of content out. So hopefully it will be a valuable follow for you.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Everyone go follow Doug. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. We appreciate you.